Real businesses like Malibu Apothecary rely on Spectrum to keep them connected.
We're a fragrance company, but we also have a lot of technology that we use. Spectrum is really the backbone of any of the business we do here. Having a reliable, fast internet service that can fit my budget is really great. I traded a 9 to 5 for a 5 to 9. It's a lot of work, but I love it.
Spectrum Business Internet starts at $40 a month when bundled. Learn more at spectrum.com/business. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Giving you a whole lot of nothing is what I was giving you. That's not what Andrew Schwartz is going to give us. He's a professor of IT in the EJ Orso, Orso College. Well, I got two different answers. You tell me, professor.
It's the Uso College. It's so great to be back again, Tommy and Dave. I loved your comments as well. I think that really sets the stage for a really great conversation.
EJ Uso College of Business at LSU, researching technology-related industry issues for over 20 years, recently been focusing his attention on AI. I think we got to start, Andrew, with, you know, what is AI? Because some of us think we know, some of us don't. We ask our phones a question and, you know, who started this, and we get an answer, but is that from AI or not? Explain this to me. How does AI work?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely right. So first, of course, we have to celebrate the massive victory last night that we had the baseball field.
Absolutely. Go Tigers.
Not AI generated.
No,
so we
sir.
Have to, of course, acknowledge this, right? That that non-AI still does exist in the world in which we live, right?
Forget AI. The Coastal Carolina coach didn't exhibit a lot of HI, a lot of human intelligence either, because you think, you know.
Absolutely.
You're told to shut up, but okay.
Absolutely, right? Yeah. So fundamentally, though, if we think about AI, AI is fundamentally about the ability for computers and technology to make sense of data or to quote-unquote become intelligent based upon the data that it's been taught. And then when provided with future opportunities or future interactions, the computer itself tries to make sense of the question that you're asking based upon what it's been trained upon.
So it... Look, this is the way I understand it, and you can tell me if I'm wrong, Andrew. I look at it as it just matches up every random probability, Venn diagram, however you want to say it, together, shows what are the commonalities, what are the differences, and then hopefully arrives at what the best decision is or gives you a synopsis of that. Am I close?
You're getting there. So basically, AI is basically just math at its really core, right? So you have a set of data, and that data exists almost like your universe, right? So think about almost like an encyclopedia. So we're going to take that encyclopedia and we're going to scan it essentially into the computer, and it's going to try to make sense of what it's been taught. Then, if you ask a question in that encyclopedia, rather than you having to turn the page, it looks for it for you. The way that it does that is it uses a series of mathematical computations called neural networks. And a neural network is a fancy name for a mathematical algorithm. And that mathematical algorithm takes all the words in an encyclopedia and it turns it into essentially numbers. And it's looking for patterns of behavior. So there are patterns of interaction. So that when you ask the question, it's going to base the question on the interaction. So, for example, if you take an encyclopedia and the encyclopedia says the sky is blue, well, using math, now the computer now learns that the sky is blue. So when you ask the AI what color is the sky, it says the sky is blue because it made sense of the data using math.
But can AI be used to make decisions at all? Because you're telling me the sky is blue, okay, and I look it up, what sky is the blue, and what color is the sky is blue. But how would you then take AI to the next level where I would ask it, okay, if I didn't want the sky to be blue and I wanted it to be orange, what would I have to do?
See, now, therein lies a great question, right? Which is it's only intelligent in the sense that it's based upon what it's been told. Mm-hmm. Now, what if, for example, you don't train it what color that the sky is, for example? That's not in the set of data you train it on. Well, the AI, it doesn't know enough to know what it doesn't know. So it makes it up, and we call that a hallucination. So if AI doesn't know the answer, it will make it up. And that's where I think that is the interesting promise of AI as of we exist right now, which is that in everything I've seen so far, the human still plays a critical role in the process. It still has to validate the findings of AI, and it still has to prompt the AI for the question that it wants to ask. Now, you're asking the question of automation, and automation is certainly a direction we're going to go. And ChatGPT and others are starting down that process with ChatGPT tasks and other kind of technologies. But we're certainly not to the point where we can just take the wheels off and say, AI, go crazy and just run everything for us.
So when you say if it does know the answer, it makes it up, apparently I've been using AI in my own life for most of it because that's what I've been doing. If I don't know the answer, I just make it up. I'm just kidding. Tell me about about artificial intelligence improving and expanding artificial intelligence. Can that happen?
As of now, no. Now, and where I thought you were going is there's a controversial study that has come out over the past week that's really sparked a lot of discussion within
the AI
community.
Well, tell me about that. It's probably better than what I had. What you got?
No, yours is spot on. There was a study by MIT, and the study at MIT concluded that ChatGPT may in fact be making us dumber. And it was an interesting study because it caught a lot of headlines, but the findings are far less more exciting than the actual truth of the study. In the study, what they did is they had students write essays using AI, mm-hmm. and they found that some of the participants, which were heavy users of AI, that parts of their brain became deactivated, and they concluded that therefore they're becoming just less engaged with the technology. Mm-hmm. However, the finding itself is, I'd caution viewers or listeners, if you heard the study, the problem is the study, it lacks scientific merit in a lot of ways. First of all, they based this on 18 students, which is a little problematic as a geeky academic. But the bigger picture is that if we look at our brain consumption with technology overall, this is pretty standard. Any technology that you use over time, your brain starts to kind of get adapted to it, and it becomes automatic. Think about, for example, when you're driving a car. I have two 16-year-old daughters, so this is a top of mind for me. Mm. They're having to concentrate a lot when they're driving, right? But think about us when we drive, it becomes automatic. Mm-hmm. Well, when you first use ChatGPT, you have to really concentrate on it, but over time, it becomes more natural. So what we're actually seeing is that what this brain study is actually showing is that we're actually becoming more engaged with the technology, and it's becoming more integrated into our life. And what a lot of us actually think is that we're going to see an amplification effect from our productivity, which is actually going to make us more productive than we ever have been before.
If you have two 16-year-old daughters, God bless you. I hope you're saving as much money as you possibly can.
Absolutely.
Because it's not going to be enough. No matter what it is, double it, then go to the third power, and it still is not going to be enough. Seriously. So
yeah,
let's talk.
You haven't told me that yet.
Yeah, let's talk. Hey, it will. Let's talk about ways that let me use it in a government way, and maybe you can make an example of this. I don't want this to be political at all. It's in the news, so I'll talk about it. Okay, President Trump decided to bomb Iran and go after the nuclear facilities. Is there any way AI? But again, it all goes into what it was fed into it. AI could have run all the different scenarios and produced a dossier for the president to use, saying this is better, this is better, this is better. But ultimately, Donald Trump or any president has to do what he thinks is right in his heart and is best for the country, right?
Exactly right. And I think therein lies exactly what my point is about AI right now, which is that we are at a point where AI has the ability to bring us a lot of vast sums of information, mm-hmm. but we're going to have to adapt to that. So let me give you a parallel, for example. Think about when the calculator first came out. The calculator, and a lot of us were old enough to remember this, right? When the calculator first came out, all the math teachers got really upset because that's it. That's the end of math as we know it. But what did they do? They adapted. So when you think about AI now, we're going to have to adapt. We're going to have to change. So AI is incapable of executing that decision that he made on the war plans. But what it is capable of providing you alternatives. Because ultimately, the human has to intervene and the human has to make that decision in the world in which we live right now.
Let me take a break. We come back. I want to talk about AI in our everyday lives because there's a macro level on this, right? And there's a micro level. And I'd like to maybe, Andrew, we come back, talk about how we on a daily basis in a micro way interact with artificial intelligence, whether we realize it or not. We're talking about Andrew. We're talking with Andrew Schwartz, professor of IT, and EJ Uso. Did I say that right?
You got it right.
Yeah, Uso College of Business at LSU. Been researching technology-related issues for over 20 years. Recently been focusing his attention on AI. Congress is holding hearings on what role AI can play in government. We're talking about it all. There are no dumb questions. If you have any questions at all, text them to 504-260-1870 as we try to learn all of this together. Back with Andrew in a flash, 920 WWL. It is 9:25. Having an interesting conversation with Andrew Schwartz, professor of IT in the E.J. Uso College of Business at LSU. He's been researching technology-related issues for over 20 years. Recently, been focusing his attention on AI. Congress has been holding hearings on what role AI can play in government, and we're talking about the whole state of AI and technology and the positives and the negatives. And I asked you before we went to break, Andrew, if you can, for people that don't understand it maybe or how they interact with it, there's the macro level with the government, right, and organizations. And then there's, I guess, the micro level on how we interact with it daily. How do I interact with AI on a daily basis, or the average person?
Yeah, absolutely. So if you ever write a Gmail and Gmail says, have you help me finish the sentence? Or if you're on an iPhone and it says swipe right to finish the sentence, that's AI generated. It's following the same pattern that we just discussed, which is it learned how we construct our sentences. And that's something I want to keep in mind, too, is that the word artificial is the word that we have to keep in mind here, because it's not human intelligence. It was artificially defined and artificially created. So it really does not lack, it does not have true intelligence in how we have intelligence. So you're going to be interacting with it more and more. For example, if you have the new cleanup app on your phone to clean up a picture, to take someone out of a picture in the background, that's using AI to generate that. So at a micro level, what that's doing is it's assuming the pixels that are behind the person based upon previous patterns or what it sees elsewhere. If you use, for example, Google Lens, and you want to know what something is, and you hold your phone up and say, "What's this?" Google can do that as well. So it's integrating into our lives on more of a daily basis than we even realize.
So somebody texted in, if they use voice to text, they notice that the voice to text is starting to pick up on their speech patterns or the words they use. Are they imagining that, or is that really happening?
They're not imagining that at all. And what's ironic is that we really started the revolution of AI with voice. If you think about Siri was really one of the first, not true, but AI kind of approach, and that used voice, and we're coming back again. So you're absolutely picking that up, and you're going to find that becomes a lot stronger. We historically have used what we call LLMs, which are large language models. The shift right now we're seeing in 2025 is a shift toward SLMs, which are small language models. These are models that we're training on ourselves. So if you call in your bank, for example, I call my bank and it says, speak this sentence and we recognize you. That's using AI to recognize you to do that.
As it relates to machine learning, deep learning, talk about the difference.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
If you would.
Sure. So the two fundamental concepts in AI are ML and DL. So ML is machine learning, DL is deep learning. ML is where you use an algorithm. So you basically use math in the same way that you use in a deep learning perspective. But with machine learning, you kind of define beforehand the structure that you're trying to find in the data. You set it loose, and it does a really good. Machine learning is really, really good on structured data. That's numbers that are like zeros and ones, or number things that we define very, very tightly. But where it falls down and where it struggles is on natural language, like what we write and what we say. So deep learning doesn't have a structure beforehand. It's trying to uncover the structure that it sees. So the learning is at a much deeper level, hence the term deeper learning.
So when it comes to things like foreign policy I talked about and potential outcomes, and it all depends what you feed into it, if somebody were, say, and I'm going to even make it about a real country, if somebody were predisposed to go to war with Genovia, well, then they could put things in there that would lend the AI to make it seem as though it would be a good idea to go to war with that country, or the other way around?
Oh, absolutely. Depending on the nature of how you ask the question, you can get a confirmation bias, meaning you can confirm what you already believe. So if you ask the question, should I go to war with XYZ, it's going to give you an answer in the affirmative rather than tell me the pros and cons. It's all in the nature of the question. So that's, again, why it's artificial. It's not true intelligence. But we could also see, what we also saw was an over-reliance upon AI in the federal government. You saw that when the tariffs were released, there were countries that the context in which the tariffs were produced, it made no sense. You had islands that had were given percentage tariffs in which the population was under 100, or there's no way that it was going to be proportional to the response. So an over-dependence upon AI, no matter who we are, has effects upon that as well.
What are some of the ways where AI is working very well, and in what industries today? If you can give me some examples of that.
Sure. What we're really seeing right now in the very early throes of this are a lot of focus on ChatGPT type of applications. So we're seeing a lot of natural language applications. Most of the companies I'm talking to today are focused a lot on that. How do I just take and use natural language? And they're looking for very operational type of elements on their day-to-day basis. So I've seen applications around, for example, safety or, you know, some elements like that that are very operational. But what we're going to see and what I'm most excited is that the use cases are going to start to ascend and become a lot more strategic. So I've had talks over the past 2 weeks with companies that want to revolutionize dentistry, that want to revolutionize even how we get trained and how we look at safety, or how we deal with the even down to the level of football. We've had early talks with football organizations about how do I use AI to understand better playmaking and understand our players better. So the range of applications is massive, because we're moving beyond text, and now we're starting to move into what we call multimodal, which are voice, video, and audio as well.
Where is this AI being developed? Is it a program? Is it an app somebody texted in? What is it?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's being developed by a lot of local talent, and that's actually one thing that I want to encourage your viewers, if any business owners as well. So, and this is something I'm not sure that if your viewers have seen that we at LSU have taken this so seriously that I'm now the head of AI initiatives within the College of Business at LSU, and we're actually looking for partner organizations that are looking to create and deploy AI within their organizations, or maybe hey, you have had an idea and you want to start a new business around AI. We're looking to partner with those. Our goal is to broaden the overall structure of the employment labor force within the state to be geared towards AI and IT.
Tell me what is your either biggest fear or ways that AI has failed miserably so far.
My biggest fear is just is twofold. One, I'm worried about digital divide. I'm worried that those that don't get trained on it are going to fall further behind because we're already starting to see evidence that this could potentially happen. We have to, and I'm talking specifically about Louisiana, we as a state really have to take seriously AI. We have to train our students, and we have, from a business perspective, we should be the leaders in this area. So I'm very concerned about the role of digital divide. The second is just bias. These technologies are biased, and we know that they're biased. And I'm concerned that with an over-reliance upon them that it's going to exasperate stereotypes. It's going to exasperate all these other kind of negative effects that we're seeing in society in terms of violence and toxic masculinity. And I base this purely upon what we see in the training data. So what you train is going to result in the output. If you want to play, take a question and take a simple question. Go to ChatGPT and say, how will LSU football do this year, or what will their record be this year? Mm-hmm. Take that same question and move it to a platform like XAI. So XAI was trained on Twitter. So the response that you're going to get is going to be fundamentally different than the one you got on ChatGPT. It's because of the nature of the data that it was trained upon. And understanding that nuance is fundamentally important.
So how do we know what's accurate and what's not?
And that's where education comes down, because that study from MIT shows me that what we really need to do is focus on education, which is critical analysis and education. Because as you alluded, we can never take the decision maker out of the process. So if we reflect upon that, how do we use this technology to make our lives better? How do we find opportunities to interact with it to maybe alleviate the boring nuance of the day? So let me give you an example. Let's say today you have a list of things that you need to do. You need to go to the grocery store. You need to do your laundry. You need to mow the lawn. You have a list of things to do. Mm-hmm. in your head, you're going to try to figure out the best sequence of orders. Why would you not ask AI to do that for you? If I need to accomplish these objectives, what should I do? Let AI help you to plan events like that. You're having a get-together. Have AI come up with ideas of new things to do or new events to have or somewhere new to go. There's so many opportunities that could open up for you if you start to embrace AI in that way.
But who's going to put all of that in there? All the information about what's best to go to the grocery store. I have to go to the grocery store today and some other things, and I'm wondering, well, how would I tell me about that?
Well, that's the beauty. It's already been trained on that for you. So, for example, my wife and I decided about two or three weeks ago, we took her to Washington, D.C. And rather than fly back, we drove back. So I had ChatGPT create my itinerary as well, along with suggested stops. So I said, ChatGPT, I'm driving back from Washington, D.C. over the course of 3 days. Plan the trip for me, including where to stop, what I should see in restaurants along the way. It came up with a full itinerary for me of ideas that I didn't even know existed. Mm-hmm. For example, I have now seen the largest pencil in the state of Virginia, which I did not even know existed, but AI found that for me. It's these discoveries of life which AI has the promise to bring to us.
But how do we know that AI is not being sponsored by somebody who wants to drive you to see the biggest pencil?
And therein lies the question. This is where transparency and regulation comes around. And back to the question you asked about the role of the federal government, there has to be guardrails and protections in place. We need to have transparency over how the data is being traded and how our data is being used. So there needs to be some rules in place for us to be able to operate this technology in this way.
Because you never know, right? I mean, you could ask a waitress in a restaurant, is there a good hotel around here? And she says, yeah, down the street. And it comes to find out it's her cousin that owns it. I mean, that's just everyday life, right?
Oh, absolutely, right. And that's some of this feedback mechanism that we're going to start to see inside of AI. So AI is going to continue to be refined and refined. And even still, one of the other predictions that I've been having for a long time is that we're going to start to see AI become a lot more customizable to each of us. Because if you think about it, every time you ask a question, ChatGPT is learning about you. And if for your listeners, some other fun experiment, ask ChatGPT, tell me about myself. And have ChatGPT tell you what it knows about you. See what it says. It's kind of a mirror.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses, like Rise Bakery, connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.
Who you are.
Somebody wants to know about what smart regulation would look like. You can answer when we come back. Also, somebody wants to know about ways that the government could use this. Would it help with weather prediction, etc.? So we'll talk about all that when we come back. We're talking about AI. It is the future. It is here. Andrew Schwartz, our guest, professor of IT in the E.J. Uso College of Business at LSU. 504-260-1870. If you have any questions, please don't ever text and drive. Traffic now, WWO. 943, 17 till 10. An interesting conversation with Andrew Schwartz, professor of IT in the E.J. Uso College of Business at LSU. Been researching technology-related issues for over 20 years. He's recently been focusing his attention on AI. Congress has been holding hearings on what role AI can play in government. We take things for granted sometimes, Andrew, and somebody texted in, what is ChatGPT?
Okay, so great. Good question. So ChatGPT is one of the examples of the LLM, which is that large language model. So that's the interface where you can begin to ask the kind of questions that we discussed. So to download, to access that, you can go to chatgpt.com, or you can download the app in your app store and just create an account and then just begin to play around with it.
And you pay for that?
There's a free version, and then there's a per month if you want some more access to some more sophisticated models. But for the average person, just using the free version is adequate.
Okay, so here's my question. Why is anybody giving me anything for free?
Well, of course, they're hoping to get you hooked, and then once you start to realize the benefits, that you're going to ascend to the paid version as well.
And I just was wondering about, when people ask, tell me about myself, what would answer would they get?
Sure. So when I asked that, I was revealed that I'm a university professor who cares deeply about technology and technology related issues, and that I really care about the next generation based upon the kind of questions that I'm asking of ChatGPT, because we're doing a lot of work around the digital divide and leaving students behind, and just making sure that this wave of technology doesn't really leave another generation behind.
And somebody wants to know if all of this information is not being stored somewhere and that will eventually be used against you.
So that's a really good question in terms of how that data, and that's a good hook to the regulation. The problem right now is that it's not being regulated. So really, we don't understand or have any transparency about how these models are being trained. So some of the regulation needs to indeed protect us and protect the companies that are providing this information. So let's be practical for a moment, right? So I'm a big Reddit fan, and one of the ways that ChatGPT trained their models was on Reddit. Well, if you're a Reddit user and you put a post on 3 or 4 years ago, you didn't know that your post was going to be trained on that data by ChatGPT. Well, we need to have some sort of consumer protection that it discloses how our data is going to be used.
Give me a best possible scenario with the use of AI where it makes society better.
Oh, there's countless different ones. You raised earlier that one of the issues of voice, and so I can give you a practical example here. So I lost my father in December to dementia. It was a year and a half fight, and I'm sure many of your listeners have gone through the same kind of fight. And dementia is a really brutal one because you watch, you know, my dad, who was a former scientist at NASA, kind of wither away and lose track over time. But AI has actually discovered that when we talk to our Alexa devices, that Alexa can actually, using AI, pick up on early signs of dementia, even to the point where in the earliest signs, we may be able to extend your life with it. And one of the tools that's being investigated right now is actually an AI phone for dementia patients. So what they're doing is they're taking recordings. So like they would take a recording of my mom and myself and my brother, and they would put that into the phone. And my dad could call the phone, and he would act like he was calling me, but he was really he was talking to the AI version of me. But that AI version of me has all the memories that I have as my dad is growing up, and it has all the stories that he told me. Mm-hmm. So my dad could listen and engage with me as if I was talking to him for hours at a time. And what they're finding is with dementia patients, it's actually reducing their overall level of agitation, and it's making their care easier as well. So that's a very practical way that AI is influencing a very tough illness like dementia.
And I'm very sorry for you because I lost a family member to that too, and I know how hard it can be. When it comes to the Siri diagnosing something like that, how does that happen?
So Siri is a little bit different, and Siri is a technology that has historically been one of the laggards in terms of how most of us view AI. And so we talked about how AI works, right, that it's trained on all this data. Well, Apple is a very privacy-oriented company. So all that data that you put on your phone, they don't allow that data to leave that phone and be used to train for any other models. Now, while that's great from a privacy perspective, the reality is that they need all that data to really train the models. So they're benefiting us, but they're also harming that as well by restricting that ability. So there's some real privacy protections that they're doing. And over the last 2 or 3 days, they're starting to acknowledge the limitation of Siri by saying that they may actually end up buying another AI company to integrate it into the iPhone, because right now their models look like they've been unable to really accomplish what they needed.
Somebody wants to know if this is going to put a lot of people out of work, AI.
And so that's a great question, and I will admit that if you Google right now, will AI lose or gain jobs, or if you ask AI, it's going to give you two sides of this equation. So there are two different perspectives. And so if you listen to, for example, over the past week, one of the heads of Amazon came out and basically said that it's going to kill corporate jobs. Mm-hmm. Sam Altman came out and said, who's the head of ChatGPT, he said that he believes that ChatGPT could get an entry-level job right now. So that led to a lot of critics saying, well, that means that we're basically going to, you know, dissolve these kind of jobs. I tend to take a more optimistic view, which is I think AI is just going to be integrated into all of our jobs. I think we're going to start to see that the rote parts of our jobs can be automated and AI can do it for us. And it's going to free us up to do the kind of deeper thinking and the deeper analysis that ChatGPT can't do.
Give me an example of a job and the rote versions of that, the rote duties in those jobs that AI could take.
Absolutely. Think about, for example, something as simple as like when you go to the doctor, right? You want your doctor to sit there and look at information and talk to you. So you want that interaction. But a lot of times with technology today, even with our EMR technology, you go in, the doctor's turned to the side and they're typing away, they're typing notes and they're kind of listening to you. With AI now, we have the ability to capture all that interaction in real time, summarize our entire conversation, and the doctor never has to actually touch the computer itself. Even further, we have the ability to imagine almost a version of Alexa, where the doctor can say, you know, prescribe this medicine at this pharmacy, and it has the ability to do that for you. So those are some ways in which we could really see some practical applications that could impact our jobs or impact our lives in a significant way.
So when you talk about Siri diagnosing dementia, and you talk about recording a conversation between a doctor and a patient, when there is miscommunication where one person says, oh, I thought you were talking about this. No, I was talking about that. How does the AI clean that up?
And that's even better because now we can truly have consensus about what the conversation was. How many times have you gone to the doctor and, you know, your husband or your wife says or your friend says, what did they say? And you recount it and you think, well, maybe they didn't say that. Mm-hmm. Imagine if you had that transcript available to you, you can go back and revisit it. It gives you reassurance and it gives you a common understanding of what we both discussed. Almost every meeting that I'm in now, and I'm sure this is how most business people now, have an AI assistant in that meeting. And that AI assistant is taking the meeting and transcribing it and summarizing it so we have actionable steps afterwards. That's saving a significant amount of time from me having to go back and summarize a meeting.
Transcription is one thing. Summarization is another, though, right? Because can't stuff get lost in a process of a summary?
Absolutely, and that's where the human again comes in, and that's where the human has to intervene. So we always do this running workshops or symposiums, and we'll transcribe them. It's fairly close; it's probably 90-95%, but that 5-10% is crucial, and that's where you go in, and the human has to intervene to do that. And that's why, you know, even with refinement, we're not to the point where AI can truly take these jobs away because it's just not nuanced enough to understand that yet.
1 minute left. Give me your biggest fear about AI.
My biggest fear is that we as a state won't embrace it. We as a state need to integrate this into our businesses, into our education system, and make it part of what we are and who we are. You know, we can celebrate a great victory in the field, and we're celebrating a lot of victories here with AI inside the state. My fear is that they won't continue. So I really want to encourage your listeners and just to get excited about this, to embrace it, not be scared. This is not going to take your job away if we as a state work together to lift everybody up. So I'm encouraged. I'm excited about what the future holds, and these are fantastic conversations for us all to have.
Thank you, Andrew. Hope you come back. Very interesting. Andrew Schwartz, professor of IT in the E.J. Uso College of Business at LSU, talking about AI and good part of it, bad part of it, how it can help, how it can hurt. Hope you enjoyed some of that conversation. If you missed any of it, you can download the Odyssey app, use the rewind feature, or just go to WWL.com, click on my name once the audio is posted, and you can go back and listen to the whole conversation. We'll take a break, come back, find out what Noel's got planned for us today here on WWL.
Spectrum Business keeps real businesses like Rise Bakery connected.
As a business owner, my Spectrum services help simplify my day. Everything we do is easier knowing that we've got a reliable connection. And it helps our business just run really smoothly. Even though our techniques are very ancient, we rely just as heavily on technology. Spectrum allows my business to go from surviving to thriving.
Keep your business running smoothly with Spectrum Internet, starting at $40 a month. Restrictions apply. Services not available in all areas.